Hi everyone, this is Maura Sweeney and welcome here to Living Happy Inside Out. For those of you who have been following along on my ABCs of Now series, you're probably thinking yet again, where is this woman and when is she going to come out with the next installment? Well, as you know, I can only give you what I get, and I can only deliver it in the time in which it comes to me. The last one I delivered was C is for crisis. And I thought, ooh, there's only two letters left when I started the series, and I was initially inspired to do it. I thought it would take me only 6 months because it was all about this time of great shifting that the world was going through. And I thought, I could do this in the next 6 months. I'll do an installment for each letter of the alphabet with an assigned word and what it means. Little did I know, that was a couple of years ago. So while you might be waiting, don't be surprised if I tell you I wait as well to say, what am I going to do? Well, I do have B, and I'm thinking, ooh, this is interesting. We're nearing the end. B, the word, is in the cooker right now. But right now, it's a word that remains, for me at least, without any content to share. I believe A was given to me from very early on, but I cannot give you B. So I was really thrilled. Oh, I don't know. I want to say like within the past week that all of a sudden, I saw flash before me a book I wrote on values. It's part of an ebook series that I wrote a couple of years ago, actually a number of years ago. And my sense is that it is going to be so timely for all of you listeners. And when I say timely, I mean timely, yes, for the times that we're in, but timely somehow. Like, do you ever realize that you may hear about certain things, but you don't act upon them, you don't pay attention to them? It could be about a book somebody told you to read, or a movie to watch, or even a concept or notion somebody brought to mind. Your ears heard them, but something inside of you just didn't register to say, now's the time. Well, I believe that for many of you, you're going to say, wow, now is the time. And I want to share something else. For some reason, when I got the notion to pass this along to you as sort of an audio book for what I already wrote, I thought, isn't this wonderful? This is sort of like my idea of a holiday gift. So to whoever is listening today, I welcome you into what I'm going to call for you the truth book, even though it was referred to as the book on values in my ebook series called The Art of Happiness. So here goes. Ready? Depending on where we come from, we all pick up certain values. Values are ideas or concepts that we consider more important than others. If you're the social type, parties and outings might be among your top values. If you're a naturalist, hiking in the mountains may be one of them. If you're deeply spiritual, you might like spending time attending religious services, meditating privately, or joining others in prayer. And if intelligence is important, or academics, you might enjoy attending seminars, taking classes, or reading up on various subjects that capture your interest. Values work in two directions, both attractive and distasteful. Our love and fidelity to certain values can mean we're repelled by or not interested in others. Practically speaking, some of what we value may be of little or no interest to others. For example, one person who values partying may steer clear of spiritual personalities for fear of becoming far too introspective. An outdoorsman or physically inclined person may find little interest in what takes place in the mind of an academic. They may believe that exploring the interior corridors of the mind involves no physical work and therefore has little or no value for them. Values are as limitless as our imagination. Consider values like balance, benevolence, and bliss, or charity, commitment, and courage. Values include other things too, like fashion, thrift, prestige, animal rescue, and social order. Well, despite the plethora of values available for personal choosing, they share the commonality of being held in high regard or importance by their holder. Contemplating and considering your own values is important. Doing so causes you to connect internal interests with your external intentions and behaviors. When a value is important to you, you can express that value in life and you feel more harmonized and at peace, hence a bit more happy from the inside out. That was my editorial comment just now. You feel generally more empowered too. In the following narrative, I'm going to talk about a particular value that means a lot to me. As I disclose my awareness of and appreciation for this value, I hope you'll be considering one or more values that mean a lot to you too. It took me decades before I realized how much I value truth. Over time, I've come to consider truth as a treasured friend. Despite my affinity for truth, I've discovered that many people don't value it and others don't care for it at all. You don't need to be a lover of truth to enjoy my next story. For those of you who'd rather run away from truth than embrace it, don't worry. Most of this book has to do with the innocuous subject of hair. Yes, hair. Join me as I share how values in life are a chosen and uniquely selected personal experience. As you follow along with me, you may gain some insights of your own. You may discover the kinds of things in your life that serve as guiding lights worthy of import. And as you discover values most dear to you, may they greet you with a smile of happiness along your way. Have you ever thought about your relationship with truth? Few do. Most people think of truth as being synonymous with fact. Others view it as an abstract concept, something more esoteric in nature. But what if truth were a person? Well, since I'm part bookworm, and one of my favorite books is The Dictionary, allow me to begin with a definition. I'd like to cite a few meanings for the word that most closely approximate the spirit in which I'm writing. Truth is roughly defined as sincerity, integrity, or fidelity to a standard or original. It's also identified as supreme reality, or that which possesses the ultimate meaning and value of existence. Fascinating meanings, right? Maybe at least to me. Well, the word truth becomes even more intriguing when you realize that, translated back to its most ancient Indo-European roots, truth translates into the word loyalty. Loyalty. If truth means fidelity to original, an original, let's say, and its foundation relates to loyalty, then choosing truth as a value in life carries enormous potential. Choosing to make truth relatable, like a person, becomes even more intriguing for those bold enough to consider the possibilities. Well, depending upon the subject matter, or the subject, like ourselves for that matter, we can either love truth or hate it. We can welcome it or try to run away from its presence. However, since truth is defined as loyal and unchangeable, it also remains a constant presence in our lives. A few years ago, I was an exhibitor at a national business conference. And while I was there, I managed to escape work duties, and I listened in to a popular public speaker and author who shared her life story with a rather emotional audience. The speaker was a woman who had been scorned. This harrowing experience brought her face to face with personal issues she carried most of her life, but apparently refused to confront. These issues she needed to confront included things like fear, lies, inferiority complexes, and other matters that related to her now shattered sense of identity. While there were certainly some aha moments contained in her address, I discerned a woman still hurting and an audience hurting along with her. When the session was over, I turned to a middle-aged woman sitting beside me. She appeared to be quite familiar with the speaker and was attuned to the audience as well. "Why do you suppose people have a hard time looking at truth?" I asked her. Well, the woman paused briefly and then responded flatly, "Truth hurts." I was struck by her sense of certainty. "Really?" I probed. "How do you suppose?" Pondering the question for a moment, she elaborated, "People avoid truth because it hurts them to face unpleasant issues in their lives. So they ignore them, pretending that the realities don't exist," I asked. "Yes, that's about it," she answered. The woman's response to my question was profound, but also rang insufficient. I was perplexed. I saw her point, but I failed to find the logic. I left the conference room wondering, did people believe they could avoid pain indefinitely by simply ignoring its source? By ignoring the obvious, did people think the truth would eventually go away? Well, since the concept of how or if we view truth as a person is the subject here, I'm about to share some of my personal tales with this rather strange and yet faithful friend. My first memory of a public encounter with truth occurred one spring afternoon. It was during one of those awkward, self-conscious eras known as junior high school. The prior weekend, my girlfriend Lori and I had attended a Saturday afternoon matinee movie. And while there, we met two boys. Bobby and Mark sat a few rows behind us and, typical for our preteen ages, captured our attention by tossing popcorn at our heads. Well, the following Saturday, the two boys rode their Stingray bikes from the next town over to our family's house. For those too young to remember, Stingray bikes had smaller wheels, extended handlebars, and long banana seats with spoilers on the back. Boys loved popping wheelies long before male testosterone transitioned its prowess to today's slick skateboards. The four of us sat on my family's front stoop, considered outside for me in those days. It was a mere 6 feet from our front door. We basked in the warm afternoon sunshine and made typical small talk. Bobby and Mark popped wheelies with pride along the front walkway. But a bit later, Nana stepped out of the front door. Now, Nana was my grandmother, but hardly a stereotype and frequently an unknown quantity. Always busy and loving to clean an already pristine house, she made her entrance among us to shake her dust mop into the open air. Noticing two visitors whose faces were not among the stoop's regular crowd, she remarked in her usual blunt manner, "And who are you two?" Ugh, nothing was ever subtle about Nana's personality. Ever. "Oh," I responded, "Nana, this is Bobby and Mark. We met them last week at the Rivoli Theater. Bobby and Mark, this is my grandmother, Mrs. Corella." Well, bypassing all pleasantries, Nana blurted out the obvious. "Look at you two both. You look like girls." I gasped, mortified. "Nana, don't say that," I whispered, trying to tame her audacious remark. don't say what," she responded, correcting my attempt to rein her in. "Look at them," she squealed, as if they were zoo animals in a cage. Nana was anything but shy or retiring. She proceeded to grab the wavy tresses on the nape of one of the boys' necks, making what she considered an obvious point. "Look at all this hair! What do your mothers say about this? You two boys need haircuts." Subtle, right? Oh, if I could have picked up the front lawn and crawled underneath it, doing so would have provided me a welcome refuge. But such was not an option. Instead, I stood there exposed. My 13-year-old anguish was now approaching epic levels of embarrassment. I was accustomed to Nana's brutally truthful style, at home, indoors, both in compliments as well as criticism. She'd alternate between singing to me, "There she is, Miss America," and then quip, "Get that jittamunica of a dress off." It was her Italian slang word for unattractive. "Mora, it looks ridiculous on you. Put on something better." But this sudden encounter in public among new male acquaintances when I was just 13 created an overwhelming feeling of discomfort. Well, despite my angst and insecurities about her remark, I really couldn't argue Nana's point on the hair issue. It was the early 70s. Boys everywhere were letting their hair grow naturally, and these two were sporting some very long hair. They actually did look like girls, but who would ever imagine blurting such a thing? Nana. She would say it, and without the slightest bit of hesitation. As far as Nana was concerned, she was merely speaking the obvious. Oddly, the conversation continued on our front door stoop, or our front stoop, I should say. I had already left the scene, with my body present, but my mind racing for a place to hide. Despite the remark about these boys' girlish locks, Nana continued chatting with the new guests. Then finally she excused herself and returned happily to her house cleaning. As the door closed behind her, one of the boys commented, "So, that's your grandmother, huh?" I nodded without speaking, bracing an already shaken sense of identity for the aftershocks that would result from Nana's ballsy remarks. I was sure this encounter would mark the first and last visit of these new friends. It was obvious that Nana's directness would frighten them from ever considering future bike trips to our stoop. Yet, while I was suspended in an altered state of consciousness, contemplating attempts to hide under our front lawn, the conversation had apparently taken a turn. I was unaware that Nana's social atom bomb remarks eventually made their way to safer territory. As it turned out, some animated and meaningful discussion apparently followed. A pregnant pause descended. I remained in bracing mode, awaiting the boys' equally raw reaction to Nana's in-their-face brashness. Instead, Mark announced a surprise. "Your Nana's pretty cool." Bobby, the quieter of the two, smiled and shook his head in agreement. My preteen anxiety suddenly evaporated, and I smiled. Despite Nana's shocking candor, these two boys recognized her honesty, her integrity. Bobby even joked, "Next time we come, maybe we'll have new haircuts." The thought was a pleasant one. The boys were cute, if not a bit feminine looking. Shorter hair would have made them even cuter. Yes, Nana was cool, and one of the reasons she was cool was due to her truthfulness. You always knew where you stood with her. Never one to hold a silent grudge or to speak behind someone else's back, Nana would faithfully address people head on. whether commenting on matters like long locks on boys or confronting gossip that hurt her feelings or those of another, Nana wouldn't hesitate to speak her mind. Surprisingly, once Nana communicated her grievance, she cleared the air, making it as clean and fresh as her spotlessly maintained house. Like fresh air, Nana was always known for her open and free expression. As a bearer of the obvious, her truth might have initially shocked the hearer, but her adherence to truth always paved the way for present breezes in her wake. Nana was a great embodiment of truth as a friend. I grew to trust her advice, her admonitions, and the goodwill she always intended. My next encounter with truth arrived during senior year of high school. Surprisingly, hair was the topic yet again. I just cut my hair. It was in deference to then-famous Dorothy Hamill, the young Olympic figure skater who'd become a 1970s media darling. Her celebrity and perky short haircut had women of all ages copying Dorothy's signature style. Well, in my case, a Dorothy Hamill cut meant chopping about 6 inches from my formerly long brown hair. The change was dramatic, bringing the length of this new cut to just below my ears. While walking the halls at school the next day and sitting in various classes, no one could miss the obvious. My familiar appearance had dramatically changed. Several remarked on the new hairdo, and more than a fair number complimented my new look. However, as I walked home from school that afternoon, my girlfriend Judy weighed in on the subject. "You know, Maura, I like you better with long hair." Her remark was very matter-of-fact. "Really?" I asked. "Yes," she told me. "Your hair looks better long." There was nothing offensive about Judy's comment. She didn't mean me any harm. Judy possessed no ulterior motive. She was merely being honest in her appraisal. Others might have been offended by her transparency, but I wasn't. In fact, I wondered how many classmates saw me earlier that day, complimented the new haircut, and then spoke negatively about me behind my back. Not Judy. She just gave me the truth. And she was right. I did look better with long hair. As we completed our walk home that afternoon, I wondered silently, where was Judy yesterday when I needed her? 2 days earlier, she might have provided me with some honest feedback before I went for that grand shearing. I could only laugh at the thought. The funny thing about the Dorothy Hamill haircut was that I didn't like it either. This so-called wedge-shaped hairdo might have been perfect for the skater, but it wasn't a natural look for me. Trying to form a precise wedge with hair that dictated its own waves was just one issue. My hair was meant to be shoulder length or longer, and time couldn't move fast enough for it to grow back. My friend Lori once reminded me of that long grow-back year. She joked about how I'd become a master at donning scarves. I'd use them to disguise the distance between the top of my shoulders and the bottom of my hair, actually as I wrote it down, the distance between the bottom of my hair and the top of my shoulders. During that time, I'd worn all kinds of scarves in a myriad of variations, all to bridge that naked gulf. Photos from a spring break to Bermuda with our friend Patty reveal an unfamiliar me, brandishing swaths of fabric around my every outfit. While there were no beach pictures commemorating the trip, I wonder if I might have attempted some creatively fashioned scarf to accompany even my swimsuit. Here are some additional notes on my truth-telling school chum, Judy. Though Judy was unaware of it, I'd made a mental note about her on the walk home from school that day. It's worth repeating many decades later. First, I respected Judy. She shared the truth about my appearance, even at the risk of my being offended. She was telling me, or she was willing to tell me, what came off as loyal. She was willing to tell me what came off as loyal to my appearance. More importantly, she told me what did not. Secondly, I mentally labeled Judy as a trustworthy figure. I genuinely appreciated her honesty, and I considered her candor a valuable personal quality. Well, for those of you who are dying to know more on the history of my hair, there's actually more. Years later, I reverted to another above-the-shoulders haircut. At the time, I wasn't thinking about Dorothy Hamill. Instead, I figured that a shorter hairstyle was more appropriate for the middle-aged woman I thought I'd become. Giving constant attention to a nearly impossible ideal, I worked daily to maintain a sleek bob with straight bangs brushed a bit to the side. The impression would signal suburban mom and part-time housewife, both roles that I was playing at the time. The problem, however, was that my easily frizzable hair was always reacting to Florida's excess humidity. Well, without giving the matter too much thought, I let my hair grow again. Looking at photos from that era, I'm actually astonished today. They lack any sense of resonance. Who is that person, I wonder? She doesn't resemble anybody I know. Surprisingly, that chin-length bob proved just as untruthful and disloyal for me during my 40s as that Dorothy Hamill cut did during my teens. The short, celebrity-styled haircut I adopted back in high school didn't fit me then. The attempt to look appropriate in midlife by trimming off longer hair failed yet again. For whatever reason, I look better in long hair. Somehow the longer hair says, this is loyal, authentic. It's a truthful look for Maura. Well, as a PS to this tale, Dorothy Hamill herself still wears that same haircut that she made famous during the 1970s. She also still looks beautiful in her own signature style. The perky teenage girl who sported a short bob while cutting the ice remains equally attractive today as a TV personality promoting pills to fight osteoporosis. Years have passed since my Dorothy Hamill haircut. The look wasn't me, but following after a model, a trend, or a popular idea taught me to receive and acknowledge truth. The truth of who and what I am. In aspects that far eclipse the ways I've chosen to style or cut my hair, truth has emerged as my lifetime friend. It's my faithful friend, too. Truth holds out a higher, finer, and more perfect version of who I am and also who we are. As a face, truth looks at us squarely, directly, and unapologetically. Though we run for cover, hiding ourselves behind thoughts, illusions, and even dark fantasies, truth pledges its loyalty to the remembrance of who we truly are. We've all undergone training, life events, and acquired mental patterns that run contrary to truth's messages of hope, honor, and expectation. We've grown accustomed to alternate, misperceived, and even misengineered stories about who and what we are. Adding to this external doubt, we tell ourselves lies and then we repeat them endlessly. we remain in a perpetual state of darkness, denial, and fear of self. It's no wonder that such overwhelming confusion would cause us to run from truth. We've convinced ourselves about shortcomings, condemned ourselves through negative self-appraisal, and remained confused in a world that has yet to find its own way. So greatly do we fear our own false identities, we prefer darkness to the advent of light. We gasp, oh, God forbid I should ever have to face what I've said, what I've done, what I deserve. Along with others, we remain in private misery and despair, held captive to the unspoken demons that dwell continuously in our head. A few years ago, I was invited to speak at a luncheon for women in transition. Following my talk, the organizer opened up a Q&A session and broached the topic of truth. She likened it to a mirror. "Has anyone here ever been afraid to look in the mirror?" she asked. "I was always running away from the mirror," she offered, using vanity as an excuse. "I thought I didn't want to be vain about my hair, my skin, or even my wrinkles. And then one day, reality hit me. I was running away from my mirror because I was hiding from truth." Conveying a moment of epic revelation, she continued, "The eyes looking back at me in the mirror belonged to my soul. They knew everything about me, and I was afraid to confront them. For several years," she shared, "I was building a marriage and a career on false premises, and deep down, I knew it. I knew I was compromising myself, but I didn't want to admit it. I was living in denial, turning myself inside out and draining away. Yet the eyes in my mirror were never fooled. They remained as my reminder that I was denying my true self, my values, and even my self-worth." Facing truth in her mirror felt daunting, but she did it head on and alone. The illusions I'd built up came crashing down before me. They couldn't stay when confronted with years of compromise, avoidance, and fear of speaking up when I knew I should have, she said. The woman had since made several changes that would allow her life to harmonize with a true sense of self. One, unfortunately, was a divorce. The second was charting a new career. And a third included starting a monthly luncheon to meet and support other women in transition. "We're all different," she told me after the luncheon was over. "Transition means different things to different people. Some women are young, transitioning from university studies and into careers. Others are women whose kids have grown up and flown the nest, and they're trying to figure out what comes next. Some are dealing with cancer and chemo treatments, and still others are facing life after divorce or even death of a spouse. The exciting thing is that everybody here brings an openness to learn, to grow, and to support one another in the process. We anticipate good things to come out of transition, not bad." I had to agree. There was an upbeat spirit to this patchwork of otherwise unconnected females. "Had I never looked in the mirror, I wouldn't have felt this energized," the organizer concluded. "And I never would have met a whole new group of special ladies." Truth is hardly easy to face. It forces us to face unpleasantries and surrender what we've grown accustomed to. Moreover, listening to its call can leave us falling, feeling lost, in a lurch. Though I'm fond of receiving words of truth from others, even if it smarts, I've experienced a mixed bag when doling out nuggets of truth to others. Here are a few examples. A woman I hired years ago still recalls a life-altering encounter one night after work when she queried me on a particular topic. While exercising at a downtown corporate gym, she was audibly ruminating about an upcoming romantic trip. Her voice revealed an internal struggle over whether or not to pursue this relationship, and she asked for my opinion. I merely turned her uncertain words into a reflective question, placing the spotlight on her present moral dilemma. Though I didn't know the outcome, she'd gone home and canceled her plans. The sudden decision resulted in the closure of one relationship and the unexpected advent of another. Just a few days later, this same woman met the man who would become her future husband. They've been happily married ever since. And to this day, she reminds her teenage children how the words I gave her changed her life. They really weren't my words. The words were already present with and in her. I was merely the voice that spoke them aloud. Sharing words of truth isn't always easy. On another occasion, I noticed a close friend suddenly changing and distancing herself from her otherwise natural behavior. So I brought it up. The two of us were quite close, and a high trust level had developed between us. In this woman's desire to find and secure male companionship, she was turning herself into a foreign entity. In short, she'd become a stranger to her very own nature. Normally welcoming honest conversation, she took offense at my observation. Despite her offense, I held out the knowledge of the woman I always knew. 2 years later, the same friend phoned me with an apology. Words spilled out of her as if by confession. She had gone against her own knowledge of self and turned into a chameleon-like personality in the process. In short, she married a man who believed he married someone else. Time wore on and their marriage wore out. By the time she called me in tears, this dear woman was living through another painful divorce. Forced to sell the couple's new townhome, she also lost any acquired equity in the downward sliding resale market of the era. For a woman prone to undermining her value, it was a painful process to live through all over and yet again. Despite this most recent marital disappointment, she was still fearful of gazing into truth's estimation of her self-worth. This is a P.S. The woman ended up facing her truth and today lives, if I could tell you, a wonderful, truth-filled, happy, and abundant life. Wasn't part of the book, but just thought I'd give you a P.S. on that one. Well, truth often shows up in my gaze, and I also have positive tales to tell about its strengthening value. And here's one of them. Years ago, I had a public encounter with a small stranger. Waiting in line with my young daughter and her friends at an outdoor water park one afternoon, my eyes lighted upon a delicate waif. The girl was probably 13, but her tiny stature spoke of a 9-year-old child. Having no parents in sight, she appeared to be spending the day with a small group of cousins or friends. Though I wasn't the child's mother, I felt suddenly quite kindly toward her. So quietly and without fanfare, I smiled and I asked her name. Thea, she answered. Thea, I smiled. Do you know that Thea is the female name for God in Greek? She nodded, apparently familiar with the reference. Thea, I told her, I see you have a very big and a courageous heart. Never allow anyone or anything to rob you of your expectations in life. You have greatness in your future. Always know that whatever paths you have to walk through in life, whatever roadblocks you have to overcome, they will actually help you to arrive at your greater destiny. Well, I smiled and then changed my orientation, aware that I had probably spoken enough to this young person. My mom does this sometimes, my daughter explained to her girlfriends who were standing with us in line. I wasn't certain if Kaylee was embarrassed by my boldness or felt it necessary to explain the unusual behavior of a woman she knew too well. But later that afternoon, I spotted Thea again. She was now soaking wet, appearing as physically insignificant as she had earlier in the day. I wondered if she would feel strange seeing me again after such a uniquely private encounter. As she approached among her group of friends, her searching eyes found and locked with mine. No one else noticed the exchange between us, and perhaps no one else should have. Thank you, she mouthed silently to me as we passed by each other. I grinned, so happy she'd received an encouragement to remain true to her private dreams and destiny. Now writing this small book about truth, I wonder where Thea is today. She's probably approaching young womanhood now. I hope she's on her way to something special, something worthy of whatever hope was in her heart. I hope she's being true and faithful to herself. Truth wasn't creating a wish for Thea that day. It was merely speaking forth the obvious that I'd seen in her eyes. Did Thea have any close and faithful friends back then? Those who would champion her most authentic and grand self? I don't know. What I do know is at the tender age of probably no more than 13, Thea recognized the unparalleled faithfulness of truth as a close companion, even when truth's message came through the voice of a stranger. If anyone knows Thea, give her a big hug from me. She made my day at the water park that day, and I'd want to tell her, thank you for loving truth too. When it comes to choosing values, I choose truth as my friend. Always present, truth helps me aspire towards sincerity and integrity. It keeps me aiming at fidelity to my original self. Truth keeps me from following fads and commonly held beliefs that may not suit me personally. On a deeper level, however, truth carries so much more as a value. It functions as a personal benefit, as the supreme reality that holds out the ultimate core of our existence. Truth can help guide us through a lot more than our next trip to the hairdresser. Well, that was part of my book on values. And I hope, though most of it concerns something as innocuous and seemingly insignificant as hair, that it speaks to you on whatever level you needed to think about and open yourself up to your most faithful internal friend known as truth, who holds out for you the truth of who you really are, because you're far more than you ever realized. Well, until the next time, I hope that this gives you something worthwhile to think about, and I do hope it makes you feel happier from the inside out. Take care, and I will be with you, hopefully, for the next episode on the ABCs of Now. Take care. This has been Maura with Maura for You.